the Financial Sense Lifetime Income Program. Now, here's the Financial Sense News Team, Jim Poplava and John Loeffler.
Hi, everyone. I'm Jim Poplava, and welcome to this week's edition of Lifetime Income.
And I'm John Loeffler. Today, we're going to address a topic which can be rough, shall we say, when it comes to planning for lifetime income and for retirement. And that is the subject of divorce, sort of when happily ever after doesn't quite go ever after. This is affecting a lot of older Americans. When you divorce later in a marriage and later in a life, there are more complicating issues than you would think earlier on because there's a certain recovery time here. And unlike divorce in previous ages, the topic has more impact today than it used to, both financially and emotionally. And it's the emotional part that can actually cloud your financial judgment. So we need to talk about that. It's almost a how-to.
Yeah, you know, it's rather interesting because we've heard these statistics that are thrown out there that 50% of marriages end up in divorce. And actually, John, according to some recent studies, and you'll hear this when I interview our guest this week, Karen Covey, the divorce rates are actually dropping, and it really depends on the age group. But according to the stats, one of the reasons that divorce rates are actually starting to drop in this country is a number of reasons. One is later marriages. Two, they cite birth control. And three, the rise of actually love marriages. And I thought that was rather interesting because you always hear this statistic that is thrown out there. And there was an article in the New York Times, and it said a lot depends on your age group in terms of the divorce rate. Any idea, John, the number one age group for a divorce today?
Nope, I haven't even thought about it.
Boomers.
Really so?
Yeah.
You would think that if they got to where they are, you know, being the old fuddy-duddies like we are, they would have got that all worked out by now.
Yeah, but the number one divorce group, when you hear the statistic 50%, it's mainly in the boomers. When you take Gen Xers and millennials, the divorce rates are actually much lower. What I found interesting in the New York Times article is 2/3 of the divorces in this country are initiated by women. So we're going to discuss this today on the show because it's really a topic that has very major financial consequences, especially as you head into retirement. And one of the reasons is having divorce at a later age, let's say age 50 and over, is number one, you have finite resources. Number two, you have a limited time. So it's not like if you got a divorce in the 20s and 30s, you can say to yourself, okay, I still have 20, 30 years to make up, and maybe you don't have as many assets then. But, you know, when you have finite resources and have a limited amount of time, let's face it, when you're 50 or 60, you just don't have the decades forward to go back and earn what you've lost in a divorce settlement, because most divorces are going to end up 50-50 in most cases.
You know, when you just consider the basic subjects of retirement, say, for example, it's bad enough when you look at boomers, say, for example, who've gone through two bad markets. Also, something you don't think about, Jim, is the boomers have been chasing inflation all of their working careers, which inhibited their ability to save and to invest, because as they made more and more, the cost of living rose right up with it. So they really, in many cases, weren't getting ahead. But now look at us. We're in a world of negative interest rates, and all of these things factor into retirement.
And that's exactly right, because it's a different situation. Because, you know, when you're 50 and 60, you're looking at retirement, and some, as we'll discuss a case study today, the divorce actually took place in retirement. And as a result of these very factors that you just cited, we're seeing a number of trends in the retirement market. Number one, people are delaying their retirement to a later years, or number two, they're working part-time. Let's say they retired from their main job, or maybe they were let go. And what they're finding is to supplement their income during retirement, they're actually carrying on part-time jobs. In many cases, John, not just 60s, but people actually in their 70s and some in their 80s. Also, they're delaying taking their Social Security because of that 8% increase that takes effect after full retirement age. For most boomers, that's about 66. So these trends are already in place right now. Now you throw a divorce into the equation financially, and it alters the landscape dramatically.
If we look at divorce then, especially among baby boomer types, what are some of the major factors that will impact divorce? It would seem to me that the most obvious one anyway is you're splitting the assets.
Well, you're going to split the assets, let's just say 50-50. You're also going to be splitting your income. So if you think of yourself as a married couple and you live in one house, you have all your income pulled together, your Social Security, all the income from your investments or pension. Now, all of a sudden, you split apart. The assets split apart, so you only have half. And then also, the income is split apart. And then also, John, in many cases, now the two separate spouses are going to go out and they're going to buy two homes instead of just living in one, because the husband may want his own home, the wife may want her own home. And so it is basically half the income, half the assets, in the fact that each spouse will have a house. And in some cases, it's not even practical to have a house. You may want to downsize. You may end up getting a townhouse or a condominium because you just don't want to expend a large amount of half the assets on a house to live in, because then what are you going to do for income? So it's really a major impact because there's so many factors. So, you know, we talked about two bear markets that we've seen in 15 years, zero interest rates, maybe not a lack of savings. In the 90s, the savings rate in this country went down to almost zero because, I mean, you didn't have to save. The market was going up 15 to 20% a year and everybody was getting rich. Well, as we know, that was a false market. It was a bubble, and that bubble came bursting in the first bear market at the beginning of the decade. So add these three factors and then throw in a divorce where you're splitting income and you're splitting assets in half, John. It is really going to be a life-altering impact financially.
I would think that before you go through this whole process, if you think this is where you're headed, you need some kind of an advisor, you know, an attorney or a divorce specialist, because your assets are going to split. And this is maybe easier said than done when you look at the idea now. Instead of having to have one place to live, you're going to have two places to live. And so income may not go as far as it did before.
You're absolutely right. We often talk when we cover the topic of retirement planning about the idea of having a budget. One of the most important things to do in a divorce is to have a budget, because now if you're a woman, you have to take a look at, okay, what is it going to cost me to live now? What is going to be my housing expense? What can I afford? What are groceries? What about medical? What are my sources of income? And this is something where an advisor really comes in handy working with a divorce attorney, because this is one of the key things. And it's also brought up in many divorce settlements. There's actually a new designation that you can get that specializes in this area. But a lot of it, John, is budgeting, because you're really taking a look at splitting your income and splitting your assets. Well, you know, it's going to be a much different lifestyle and much different change. And I'll tell you, that's one of the first things that you really want to do is get an advisor, an attorney, and really take a look at this, if this is the way things are going to turn out to be, or there's going to actually be a divorce. So you fully understand this, because a lot of couples don't, John, fully understand this and the financial consequences of going through that divorce and what it'll mean to both spouses in terms of lifestyle.
And the one thing that's really, I think, important is that things are different if you're in your 50s or 60s than when you were in your 20s or 30s. 20s or 30s, you were starting out in life, and there was some, well, you were already into life, but there was some rebound time here you could have to get reorganized. And a lot of times you didn't have as many assets. When you're older, the amount of what I call bounce time is a lot less to do that recovery and change of lifestyle. And the asset situation quite often gets a lot more complex.
It is. And my guest, Karen Covey, is a specialist in this area, and she wrote several articles on, you know, divorce before and after 50, and a couple things really stand out. Let's just go through a few of these. Before 50, custody, child support, and parenting issues are a big issue. After 50, college expenses and supporting adult children. Before 50, retirement is far away. I mean, if you're in your 20s and 30s, you're thinking, okay, that's 30 years from now, that's three decades. I don't need to worry about that. Well, after 50, retirement is now or soon. Medical issues aren't often as pressing, especially when you're younger. You know, you're healthy, you're not worrying about your health. Medical insurance and medical expenses are a big concern for anyone that's entering into retirement. It'll be one of the biggest expenses that you will face next to your income taxes throughout your retirement years. And also when you're first starting out, before 50, finances are fairly simple. Well, after 50, you've accumulated assets. Maybe you have a home, you have equity. Finances can be complicated. And also being younger, as we pointed out, I mean, especially 20 and 30s, you've got decades to recoup financially from a divorce. That's not the same case after you, let's say, in your 50s or 60s. You don't have that time to recoup. So there's a lot of things that people really need to understand before they finally say, okay, that's it, this is over, and really fully understand this.
Well, now that we talk about moving through this, let's do a checklist of items that you need to think about as you start into it. And of course, this is not substituting for some kind of a divorce attorney or divorce advisor.
Well, I mean, one of the first things that you're going to have to do is know the divorce law and statutes of your state and know how your state's laws and procedures work. I mean, normally the divorce process, there's pre-filing considerations, you select attorney, or there's what is called a pro se divorce where you're not going to get an attorney. We have many of the states today, we have no fault divorce, you have waiting periods, there could be temporary orders, permanent orders, and we don't have time to cover it, but we'll cover this in a later show. But the tax status and the approaches to settlement, I mean, you know, whether you do it amicably or you go through mediation or arbitration or a collaborative divorce, because the less time you spend in the courtroom and with attorneys, the less expensive it becomes. Because I can tell you, those attorney fees, if it's a long protracted divorce, can be considerable. And there's a term used by divorce attorneys. It's called a pro se divorce. It's when a person chooses not to use an attorney. And according to statistics, approximately roughly 50% of the parties in divorce proceedings do not hire an attorney. But really, there are several problems with this. Number one, income taxes. Most couples do not understand the tax consequences of transferring certain properties, such as a house or a stock, with a low-cost basis. One spouse may end up stuck with a huge tax bill. You have mixed assets. What if the parties do not completely understand the difference between marital and separate property? Some property could be transferred without fully understanding the legal options. Also, even more complicated today, and we see this so often, pensions. Sometimes retirement accounts are the most valuable marital asset. If the parties do not fully understand retirement plans, they could grossly undervalue what is being divided. Some also fail to understand the consequences upon the death of an employee or a non-employee spouse. In these cases, benefits could revert to the company rather than the intended beneficiary. So these are things that you really have to take a look at. I mean, just about every state in the country now has what is called a no-fault divorce. Some states recognize faults on grounds for divorce as well. But I mean, it's getting more complex, like everything else that we do financially today. There's more regulations, there's more tax consequences, and you know, there's various things that you can do. But I mean, what you want to do is you want to minimize the tax options. You want to minimize the legal bills. So if you could go through arbitration, if you can go through mediation, a collaborative divorce, obviously that is going to be so much better than a long drawn out court battle, which are just going to eat up fees on both sides. And so this is something that you want to take a look at, work with an advisor and work with an attorney, because look at this way. Your income is going to be cut in half. Your assets are going to be cut in half. The last thing you want to do is be spending a whole bunch of money on lawyers and in the courtroom. And there's so many things that go into this settlement and in going through a divorce that from a financial planning perspective, it's a whole different avenue that you look at financial planning and retirement planning.
Well, if we have to go through this process now, what does the process look like? Not just items, but I mean, we take a step and what's your first step? Then your second step. I hate to make it so clinical, but it really does come down to this.
Well, I mean, the first thing you're going to have to do is take a look at your income and your deductions, because, you know, a lot of times in the negotiation in a divorce, for example, when you separate and become legally divorced, you're going to be a single taxpayer, and you're going to find on a lower level of income, you're going to rise to a higher tax bracket at a lower level of income. There's also deductions. And if there's any children at home, there's a special deduction for head of household, which is more favorable from a tax point of view. And these are negotiating points that you use in the process. The other thing is you have to look at living expenses for both spouses. And most spouses don't think of that. You know, if you've been married for a while, you know what your expenses are, basically. You know what your income is. But have you ever thought of what it's going to be like if you're alone, what your expenses are going to be, what your housing costs are going to be, what your medical is going to be, and then given what your level of income. So you're looking at your income, your deductions, and then you want to come up with a budget. And then the other thing is the analysis of assets. And a lot of times this is a very key area for negotiation, because let's take an example. Let's say you have investment real estate, or you have a stock, or you have a bond portfolio. Well, obviously, the growth characteristics of, let's say, a bond versus a stock are much, much different. I mean, if let's say one spouse gets the stock, well, that spouse that gets the stock is probably going to be more better off financially down the road than someone that, let's say, that got the cash or the bonds or investment property. There's also the issue of liquidity. And you'll see here in a case that we're going to discuss where one spouse basically did not want to give up and fought for the house. They built a custom house and she basically wanted to live there. And this was a negotiating point in the settlement. But once again, that left the wife with less liquid assets. And that's very important because remember, a house is a shelter, but a house does not produce income. So all these things that you don't normally think about, I mean, when you're planning for retirement, it's basically, okay, where are we going to live? We'll have a house. What's our income going to be? And what do we want to do? What are our hobbies are going to be? It's much, much different when you go through a divorce. The things that you have to look at is, you know, if you've been married for a long time, you have to start thinking, wow, what is it going to be like to be a single individual? The friends that you have may be put in an awkward situation. Your friendship, your relationships may also change in the process. And it's not simple, John, to just kind of, you know, people say, okay, we'll just, you know, we have $1 million. She gets $500,000. I get $500,000. It's not that simple. You have to look at liquidity. You have to look at the growth issues and you have to look at the tax consequences, especially, you know, a filing return, what the status is going to be. If there's children, head of household, also what your tax status is going to be filing as a single individual, where you may have, gosh, I can't believe I'm making less income, but I'm paying more in taxes. Well, you're going to be in a single tax bracket. And that's exactly what's going to happen. So liquidity issues, growth issues, and tax consequences. And I wish we had more time to cover this today in the show on tax consequences, because there are so many pitfalls here that can really come back to haunt. And it's not unusual. And I've seen this over the years where one spouse gets a whopping tax bill that he or she did not count on or figure in their plan.
We should talk about emotions, because you're trying to make decisions in a time when a lot of times you're in an emotional state. Now, some divorces happen on a relatively amicable basis. Some of them are just bloody, Jim. And your emotions can cloud your financial judgment, especially if the spouses are creating warfare between them and trying to run this one down. Because when you're married, you know, you have the same friends, you do a lot of the same things. But as you mentioned, it isn't a thing split evenly down in half, 50%. There's a factor in here where your expenses are greater relative to you than they were when you were married.
Oh, absolutely. I mean, just think of shopping for food, the economies of scale with food, or, you know, the big factor right here is you're going to have two houses now instead of one. And you're going to have to take assets, and each spouse will probably end up buying their own home in the case that you'll see today. In this example, actually, one spouse chose not to buy a home as the better option, but your expenses are probably going to be a lot more. everything from medical insurance, your food bills, all of a sudden you're just cooking for one person. So all of these things you have to look at, because if you don't, you know, you're going to have a rude awakening, as I've seen this so many times over the years. And it's something, John, that I would say probably over the last decade, we're running into more and more of these issues all the time with existing clients or new potential clients. And it's not only looking at your retirement, but viewing your retirement much different. I mean, you know, imagine yourself, you have this dream of retiring someday, and let's say you had this magic number that you had in the back of your mind. Okay, if we get $1 million, everything works out great for us in retirement. All of a sudden now, you're going through a divorce, and all of a sudden that $1 million now only becomes $500,000 for each spouse. Obviously, you're talking about a different lifestyle. And what if that $500,000, let's say that all of a sudden you have to sell the house, and let's make it easy, and let's just say there was $500,000 equity that you had in your home, or let's say your home was free and clear, and now you have to split that home. Let's say you owned a home free and clear, $500,000. Now you're splitting it, $250,000. You may not be able to buy a house that's free and clear. You may have to buy a condominium or a townhouse and maybe put $250 down, and you may end up having a mortgage, a new expense that you hadn't counted on, with less income than you thought. In many cases, you might have to move to another location or move to another city or another part of town because it could be awkward. I mean, you imagine a husband and wife belonging to the same country club, and all of a sudden you go through a divorce. What do you do with your friends? You know, what if you start dating again? How awkward is that going to be with both of you belonging in the same club? So, I mean, there's all kinds of emotional relationship issues that come to play here with where you live, your friends, and your children.
So I would guess from what we're saying here, in many cases, you'd probably better have a backup plan, because with your assets being halved and the situation changing, there's a lot going on here.
Oh, there's a lot going on. And you're right, John. You better have a backup plan. And you may end up going back to work, maybe even if it's only part-time. You may end up relocating to another city. You know, what's that like to go to another city and start all over again with new friends and relationships? So it's definitely an altering event, major event, much more dramatic impact in your 50s and 60s than it was in your 20s and 30s. Now, unless you are, let's say, Larry Lots of Bucks, and the case study that we're going to study today and discuss was a couple. He was a businessman, and it was basically, you know, he was very successful. They had assets, a lot of assets, but the way they were structured, it was a different outcome for both of them.
And I should point out, by the way, our guest tomorrow here on Lifetime Income is Karen Kobe. She's a divorce lawyer, a mediator, and author of the book, When Happily Ever After Ends. So she will address in more depth the things we're talking about. Now, every week we do a real-life case study. These are real-life studies, as the title actually implies, but we change the names of the people to protect their privacy.
This week, we're going to talk about Greg and Sophie Smith. Greg is 69, Sophie is 66. They are both retired. Life expectancy for Greg, 88, and 93 for Sophie. Their risk tolerance, like many people late in their 60s, are moderately conservative. Their investment objective was income and preservation of capital. A little background, after being married for over 25 years, they decided it was best to get a divorce. Unfortunately, they felt like they had drifted apart after the kids went to college and realized they wanted very different things for the rest of their lives. The divorce, in this case, was amicable, and they still get together, believe it or not, for family events. So it was an amicable divorce, which we advised in this situation, because we just told them, I said, look, if this gets hostile, and there were a few rough moments here, I said, the legal bills just go through the roof. And so they opted for arbitration, so things could be fairly simple. It was less expensive. Greg, at age 69, he was a retired business owner. He sold his business after 33 years of ownership with his newfound free time. He really wanted to travel the world and pursue photography. Sophie, on the other hand, is retired. She enjoys spending all her free time volunteering, which is a big part of her life now, and working in her garden. She also enjoys being home and spending quality time with the kids and the family. And they have a lot of close friends. So as we looked at this situation, what was important to Greg and Sophie? Sophie wanted to live in their current residence. It was a house they designed, lived in, raised the kids in, and it was near the club. It was everything. She just loved where she lived. She loved the neighborhood. It was convenient. She could get to stores. She had access to medical close by. So she wanted to stay in the house, and that was a major asset, and it was a key in negotiating. Both were concerned about maintaining their lifestyle, especially now since they were going to be splitting up the assets and the income. Greg wanted to maximize retirement income to afford his retirement goals of travel. So looking at Greg's retirement budget, his essential budget was $50,000, discretionary, mainly travel and photography, $56,000, total of $106,000, Social Security was $32,000, shortfall was $74,000. Sophie's budget, a little less, essentials $50,000, discretionary $23,000, $73,000, Social Security $24,000, shortfall $49,000. And remember, folks, when you split up your expenses, I think it's going to shock you to find out, you know, what was split between the two of you now becomes a single expense for one of you. And that's why these expenses are much higher. Greg's assets post-divorce, sale of business proceeds, $518,000. Greg's trust, his portion of it, $1,022,000. Greg's cash, $114,000. Greg's retirement portion, $960,000. Total investment assets of $2.6 million. Liabilities, $80,000, net worth, $2.5 million. Sophie's assets, she got the primary house. She wanted to stay there, and that house was $850,000. So now, what was real key here that we had to point out with Sophie, you had $850,000, almost $1 million in a piece of real estate that, yes, it was a roof over your house, but it wasn't producing income. You're losing the potential for at least $25,000 to $30,000 of income by staying in that house with this kind of value. Sophie's trust was $270,000. Sophie's individual account, $116,000. And her portion of the retirement, $1,362,000. So she had total investment assets of $1,748,000, liabilities of about $100,000. Greg's financial plan, we needed to find a new residence since Sophie was going to retain the home in the divorce. And he wanted to pursue expensive hobbies in retirement, especially international travel. And he wanted to maintain his lifestyle. His estate plan needed to be updated also to reflect the changes due to the divorce. On Sophie's side, same thing, wanted to maintain her lifestyle, but concerned about the affording the primary residence on her own, and she doesn't want to move or downsize. You know, we suggested, you know, maybe find a, let's say, a widow or somebody, a possible roommate, but she didn't want to do that. Her estate plan also needed to be updated as well. Greg's retirement plan, basically, we took from the trust a little over $1 million. We put it in fixed income and dividend payers at roughly 3.1%. That produced almost $32,000 a year. Business proceeds, we put in dividend stocks at 3%. That was about a little over $15,000 a year. And then his retirement plan, fixed income and dividend payers, same 3.1%. That was $29,000. So total investment income was a grand total of almost $109,000, almost $110,000, less budget of $106,000, surplus of roughly about $2,900. Now, one of the reasons that we did a little bit more on the dividend side for Greg is Greg wanted to travel. And based on his hobbies, his travel budget, his expenses, there was a surplus left of only $3,000 a year. So he had to have something in his portfolio that would increase his income each year because he was cutting it close on maintaining that lifestyle. In Sophie's case, basically, she had $24,000 of Social Security. Her trust income, we put in fixed income and dividend payers, 3.1%. That was $8,000. And then the retirement account, almost $1.4 million. That was $42,000. Total investment income, $50,530. Add Social Security, it was roughly about $75,000 a year. Less budget of $73,000. Her surplus income, cutting it close once again, of about $1,500. And it was one reason I said, you know, both Greg and Sophie, I said, we have to have something in your portfolio that is going to increase your income every single year, because inflation alone is going to eat into that budget. And so what was a very easy retirement lifestyle with the two together became a different lifestyle after the two of them separated. And so Greg, in his case, because he was going to do a lot of traveling, he just didn't want to take to maintain his lifestyle and sink a lot of money into a house. So he chose to rent a condo instead of buying another home. And by renting, that's going to allow his assets to generate the income for him to live in a lifestyle he still wants to maintain. We also updated his estate plan with the new trust, as well as power of attorney and medical directives. And believe it or not, it was the amicable divorce, and both spouses have a power of attorney and medical directives on the other spouse, even though they are now divorced. In the case of Sophie, in order to maintain a budget each month for expenses, she wanted to keep that residence, so she kept the home. This means she has less investable assets than her husband, Greg, in order to generate the income. We also updated her estate plan. But here was a case, John, where basically a couple together would have had an easy income in their lifestyle, given their assets of close to $5 million, a little over $5 million. But in this case, one spouse kept a home and the other one chose to rent is the only way to make things work.
You know, you would look at this and say this was a couple that actually had it made, but after the divorce, it really was an altered lifestyle.
It really was. And in Greg's case, I said, there's no way, Greg, that if you go out and buy a home or anything close to what you want, you're going to be able to maintain your lifestyle. I mean, he only had a surplus of less than $3,000 a year. And the only reason he was able to do that is he didn't buy a home, because if we would have taken anything he would have been interested in buying, it would have been anywhere from $400,000 to $600,000. Well, that would have been $18,000 to $20,000 loss of income. So there's no way he could afford to own a home. And so he was comfortable with that. He said, you know what? There's plenty of condominiums around where they used to live, where his former residence was. And so he decided to rent. So, you know, here was a case. That's one thing that happens when you get divorced. In many cases, now you're looking for two homes to live in instead of the one you used to live in.
And our guest tomorrow on the program, Lifetime Income, continuing this discussion, is Karen Kobe. She is a divorce lawyer, a mediator, and also an author, When Happily Ever Ends. And she'll have much more information to input to the subject that we've been discussing. So, Jim, any closing thoughts?
No, we're going to be covering a little bit more detail. We're going to do a whole show just on some of the tax consequences, because this is a gotcha in many divorces, and also about liquidity and growth issues, because this is not clearly understood in a lot of the divorce cases that we have seen. So I want to cover this and devote a whole show to it, because it's just much too extensive to paint with a broad brush as we sort of did here today. So we'll be picking up a little bit more on this in the weeks ahead. In the meantime, on behalf of John Loeffler and myself, we'd like to thank you for joining us here on Lifetime Income. Until you and I talk again, we hope you have a pleasant week.
You can subscribe to Financial Sense NewsHour in the iTunes and BlackBerry podcast libraries, or at feeds.feedburner.com/FSM. Find more information about our guests at www.financialsense.com/newshour. Friend us at www.facebook.com/financialsenseonline. For our on-the-go listeners, you can access Financial Sense on your mobile device at m.financialsense.com. The Financial Sense News Hour is for informational and educational purposes only and should not be considered as a solicitation or offer to purchase or sell any securities. The investments, investment strategies, and investment philosophies discussed or presented on the News Hour each involve their own unique risk factors, which are not discussed on the show. Responses to listener inquiries are based on the personal opinions of James Poplava and do not take into account listeners' suitability, objectives, or risk tolerance. Financial Sense News Hour and its parent company shall not be liable for any financial losses that result from investing in any companies profiled on or advertising with Financial Sense, or arising out of the use of any material on the News Hour. Be advised that you invest at your own risk.